My name is John, and I am an alcoholic. Everybody all right? Are the newcomers still here? <They're> still... Hey, if you're new, you know, and you're a little confused by the concepts and the traditions, don't worry about it. I'm confused too, so it'll just be confusing. This is a great time of year. I'm glad to be here. It's been a couple years since I was here, and I love to come to AA, particularly this time of year. This is a great time of year to do AA. This is my 29th holiday sober, and I just love it. The first one was a bitch, you know, it really was. It's just a hard time, first time out. But it's a great, and it's a paradox. Alcoholics Anonymous is a program of paradoxes, you know. You'll be new, and if you're in treatment, you know, if you've been in treatment, they'll tell you, you know, you're going to have to change everything. You're going to have to change your playmates, change your playgrounds, change your playpens. You're just going to have to change all that stuff. And then you come into AA, and you get a sponsor. First thing your sponsor says, hey, don't make any major changes the first year, you know. It's just a paradox. Yeah, it's a paradox here. It is coming up on Christmas here, New Year's Eve. Here it is, New Year's Eve. Here's the paradox. All the Baptists, and up here I can say Mormons, are out there talking about the drunks. And all the drunks are in here talking about God. You know? How's that make sense? That's just a paradox, the way it goes, you know? It's amazing. Wait, is this open? We got Al-Anons here. Come on, raise your hand if you're an Al-Anon. Yeah, we got a few. Good. I'm glad. You need to be here. I was out in California at this convention, big convention, in a hall, in a convention hall, and right next to attached to the convention hall was this shopping mall. And I'm out there on Saturday, just killing some time in between meetings, eating some frozen yogurt, and I'm sitting there. And here come these boy and girl, these two punk rockers. You got punk rockers here in Salt Lake? Yeah? And they're in AA. They got their name badge on. So they're in AA, boy and girl, holding hands. And the guy's got a green spike going out this way. And he's got a purple spike going straight up in the air. And he's got a pink spike going out here. And they're dressed kind of like the way I used to dress when I'm living under the bridge, you know? And they're just walking in. Right next to where I'm sitting, they got this sunglass boutique. And the guy goes in there and he puts on these sunglasses. And his girlfriend looks at him and says, take those off. They make you look stupid. Just a distorted perception of reality, you know? And we're not the only ones that got that distorted perception of reality. Those normies got that distorted perception of reality out there. Right next to that sunglass boutique, they got this earring joint, you know, where they the women's accessories, the earrings and stuff. And they got a big sign up in the window, and the sign says, ears pierced while you wait. What's the alternative to that, you know? Just distorted perception of reality. We got that in Dallas. They got a distorted perception of reality. They got a big, it's a boutique now, it's a chain. They got a lot of these out there now. It's called condoms to go. You can't use them there. No. They come arrest you, you try to use them there, you know. Got a drive-through window, we want you to take them and go home. We don't want to use them here, you know. Condoms to go. Just distorted perception. I got that distorted perception of reality, but that's not my fault. I am an adult child of non-alcoholics. That's a bitch, okay? Because I got nobody to blame. I got nobody in my family drank. I grew up here in Utah. I grew up in Orem, you know, and nobody drank. My mom and dad didn't drink. Brothers and sisters didn't drink. I didn't drink. I grew up in a very normal environment, very middle-income America type stuff, you know. Went to college like you're supposed to go to college. Never drank. Got married my senior year like you're supposed to. You know, you get a little senioritis, so you get married. Got out, went in the insurance business right here in Salt Lake City. Doing pretty good, never drank. But I was scared. And I'm just gonna take a few minutes to talk about what happened, what it was like and what happened, and then I gotta get on because we wanna get out of here in about 35 minutes. And that's, so we're gonna hurry through this. But I was scared. I wasn't drinking, but I mean, I'd come in the morning, secretary would give me these little pink message notepads. I'd say, what are these? She says, well, those are your phone messages. I'd say, who from? She'd say, I don't know. I said, well, what do you think they want? She said, well, they probably want to buy insurance. I think from me, you know? I mean, phones are scary to me. You think about it, phones are scary. Oh, jeez. When you're a practicing alcoholic, that phone ring, 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 ring. And this was before they had all that technology. Because you walk around, you look at that phone, wonder who's calling, you know? And this, I want to tell you, all that technology, it was tough being an alcoholic back then. To be drinking and practicing alcoholic, have a telephone with no caller ID. That was scary, man. That phone would ring, wonder who's calling, you know? Then we got caller IDs, and we got answering machines were the first thing we got. And that was tough because that phone would ring, and you could set those answering machines early on to pick up on the first ring or the second ring or the, you know, I always pick mine at first ring. I want to know who's calling. And the only problem with that is that when they'd hang up, not leave a message. Then you got to walk around all day wondering, well, who called? Yeah, I'll make you drink. Wondering that, you know? So I'm living here and I'm hanging out with a guy named Stuart. Stuart drank in the bar. So I'd go down to Stuart and I'd sit in the bar with Stuart and I'd drink Coke, he'd drink whatever, and I'd love the bar. I love everything about the bar. So you can go down to the bar, you can be anything you want to be in the bar. Anything you want to be. Go down to the bar, we get some women over the table, you know, and I'm drinking Coke, he's drinking whatever he drinks. And we get women over the table, and they say, what do you do? I like to do a lot of stuff, you know, when I'm drinking. Sometimes I'd retire. I'd say, what do you do? I retired. 24-year-old retiree. I said, you must have made a lot of money. Oh, yeah. That's why I drive a Toyota. Sometimes I like to be that mystery guy where you don't tell them what you do. They say, what do you do? Well, nothing. We got to do something. What do you do? Like, I can't talk about it, okay? I just can't tell. Let's just drop it now. Please, drop it. Okay, one thing, then we got to drop it. I'm only going to tell you this. Let's just say I work for the government, okay? That's all I'm going to say. No more. Okay, one more thing. If I leave here real quick, you better come after me because there's some shit going down here tonight. That's all I'm going to say about it. I love being that guy. By the way, I'm doing all that sober. I ain't started drinking yet. See, because it never was good enough for me to be John Allred insurance agent. I had to be John Allred somebody else. And it didn't really matter what that something else was as long as it was something other than what I was. You know? And so, finally, when my second child was born, I had my first drunk. And I was a great drunk. Stuart called me up and congratulated me because I had this little baby boy and a little second child, a baby girl. And he said, we're taking out drinking tonight. You're going to get drunk. I'm buying. I'd say, okay. So we got drinking. So we got the private club. I understand they've done away with those now. But back then, we had to go to private club. And we went out to the place called the winery, right across from the Salt Palace. You walk down the steps into the winery. Lights flashing, live band going on. I had my first drunk. It was a great drunk, you know. I don't know what I drank. A lot of people know what they drank. I don't know what I drank. They bring a drink over, dark drink, got a cherry in it. I just drink it down. Next, somebody would buy me a light-colored drink, got a twist around it. I just drink it down. Somebody buy me a drink, got salt all around the rim. Damnedest thing you've ever seen in your life. Just drink it down. Just drank whatever. Had a great time. Drank everything they put in front of me. Danced. I want to tell you something right now. A few drinks, I can dance. I don't have to, so you think you can dance. I know I can dance. Dance that night. Dance with two lesbians. Okay, they're out there dancing together, you know. And I thought, they probably want me to join them. So I go out, and then they left together, and there I am alone. But I learned something. When you're drunk, you're just drunk. There's no rejection, you're just drunk. Sat down, drank the next drink sitting in front of me, got up the next morning, really felt pretty good. You know, no hangover, a little tired, but I felt pretty good. I called up Stuart, and I said, Stuart, I said, I had a ball. He said, you did. You flat got after it. I said, do you think you're going to have a drink tonight? He said, I don't know. I hadn't thought about it. I'll probably stop and have one. I said, what time? He said, well, I got to work till 3 o'clock this afternoon. I said, well, let's meet at 3:30. So I meet at 3:30, got drunk again. So that's what I do. I get drunk. I never drank socially. I never got that cocktail or that glass of wine and visited, you know, and stirred my drink, watched the ice melt, and then went home. I never drank that way. I drink to get drunk. That's what I, in fact, 3 weeks after that first drunk, I remember pulling up in front of the liquor store at 10, because they open at 10. So I'm on time, okay? Pull up at 10, I go in there, I buy 3 little mini bottles of vodka, you know, those little, the little mini bottles, you know what they're. Because they told me you can't smell vodka. So I buy those 3 little mini bottles, and I go out to the car, and I crack those little mini bottles open, suck. That's hard. Hole's only that big in those little bottles. You get a hernia sucking on those puppies, you know, you really well. But I'd suck those down, and then I could go to work, be okay to go to work. And my life's changing immediately. I'm getting all kinds of trouble, and it's just changing. And I'd read the mothers at that time were really getting mad about drunk drivers. And they were organizing. And they were publishing a lot of articles in the newspaper. And I read this one article in the newspaper. It said only 1 in 2,000 drunk drivers gets picked up for DWI. 1 in 2,000. I read that and I thought, that's pretty good odds. I can get drunk every single night for like 5-6 years before I need to worry about getting a DWI. You know, I've been drinking 6 months to get my first DWI. Man, what are the odds of that? You know? Okay, I guess I got like now 10, 11 years before I get to have to worry about my next DWI. But my life's changing. People are starting to tell me my drinking's out of control. They start telling you you're alcoholic. As soon as they start to tell you you're alcoholic, you're screwed. Because there's no correct response to that accusation. They say, you're an alcoholic, man. You can't say, am not. Because they say, okay, see, denial. First clue to alcoholism is denial. You're in denial. And you can't say, yeah, you're probably right, because hell, then you got to go to AA, you know. So you just can't, you're just screwed when they start telling you're an alcoholic. And I'd say, well, what's an alcoholic? How do you know you're an alcoholic? What is that? What's an alcoholic? Now, don't get excited, John. It's a disease. I say, fine. Then let's go to the doctor. Let's get a proper diagnosis. Well, we really can't do that. Okay, how do you know you're an alcoholic? Can we go get some blood analysis? No, we can't do that. Well, how do you know you're an alcoholic? Can we go get like a CAT scan or an MRI or something? No. Well, how do you know you're an alcoholic? Well, yeah, here's the deal. Y'all want me to quit drinking. Okay, what happens 20 years from now? I find out I'm not alcoholic. I've blown 20 years I could have been drinking. Okay. Not willing to take that kind of risk. Just not going to take that kind of risk, you know? I say, well, you drink too much. As soon as they told me I drank too much, I know I'm not alcoholic. Because I never drank too much in my life. In fact, I'll tell you a secret. There's not an alcoholic in this room that ever drank too much. It's impossible. Won't happen. See, I am alcoholic, not because I drank too much. I'm an alcoholic because I couldn't drink enough. You ever drink enough? Oh, yeah, I can see somebody from this group. You go to the bar, you have a couple cocktails. Bartender says, you care for another cocktail? Oh, golly. It's Monday. Tomorrow's a work day. I think I've had enough. Shit. Never had it. I go to the bar at noon. Every day I start drinking at noon, right? It's now midnight. I've been sitting on the same damn bar stool for 12 hours. And I'm drunk. Hell, I know I'm talking about it. Stuart,
God, I'm drunk. He says, me too. Can I buy another drink?
Never had enough. Well, if you can't drink enough, it's impossible to drink too much. See, normal drinkers, those Al-Anon folks, normal drinkers can drink enough. And so occasionally, but not very often, they might drink too much. But if you're an alcoholic, like I'm an alcoholic, and you can't drink enough, it's impossible to drink too much. In fact, when I drink, an incredible thing happens. When I drink, it's like a little bomb explodes inside, and it fills every empty pore I got. And I am happy, joyous, and free when I'm drinking. When I'm not drinking, man, I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, and I am restless, irritable, and discontent. In fact, when I drink, you know those promises in the book? Come after step 9. When I drink, those promises come true in my life. Every time. I don't know about you, but after that very first drink, I begin to know a new freedom and a new happiness. And after 3 or 4 drinks, I don't know about you, but that fear of financial insecurity just kind of slips away. Hell, we don't need money. I got checks. You know, we're okay. After 6 or 7 drinks, I don't know about you, but I intuitively know how to handle situations that are baffling me. You know? It's incredible how that works. After 8 or 9 drinks, I begin to comprehend the meaning of serenity. And after a dozen drinks or so, it becomes real clear that alcohol is doing for me what I can't do for myself. And you want me to quit. Why would you do that? Why would you quit? Hell, you ain't going to quit. Makes no sense at all to quit. Now, here's the reality. When I first came into AA, they read me, you can go through those promises, those 12 promises in the book, and every one of those promises is what alcohol did for you. Every one of them, if you're alcoholic. When I first came in, they read those promises to me as kind of a motivation to get me to stick around, you know. I read that and I thought, what kind of weak deal is this guy going here, man? Because what I really wanted is a promise. I want you to promise me, okay, I want you to promise me a job and promise me a place to live and a car and I get my wife back. My sponsor said, wait a minute, we can't promise your wife come back. Can't promise your wife come back. He said, but I can tell you what you can do. We got a lot of guys here in AA that are married. They keep screwing up. Maybe you can get one of theirs. That's about the way it works, you know. But those were kind of promises I thought and you read me those promises? Now, the reality is, my whole life, up to this very minute, I insist on having those promises in my life. The alcoholic has to have those promises. So, alcohol will give me those promises. So I'm going to have a program that's going to give me those promises without drinking, or I'm going to go drink to get them. Because I can tell you right now, tonight, you can go out and drink, and alcohol will do that for you. So I got to have a program of recovery that's going to give me those promises without drinking, or I'm going to go drink to get them. Okay? So, the only way I know how to do that, the only program I know is the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So you can jack around with this all you want. You can attend all the meetings you want to attend. You can talk to your sponsor all you want to talk to your sponsor. You can pray to God all you want to pray to God. And if you do not work the steps, the clock is ticking. Because those promises don't come until after step 9. Which means you got to work the steps. And if you don't work the steps, the time will come when you will need those promises in your life and you're going to go drink to get them. I can promise you that. That's a promise you can put. You know? I didn't know any of that then. All I know is that, man, when I drink, I'm okay. When I'm not drinking, life's a bitch. You know? And it didn't make any sense to quit. I got a lot of problems, but alcohol wasn't one of them. So I started that geographical thing. My folks were going to commit me. They were going to lock me up. So I called a buddy of mine who lives in Seattle. That's when I figured out the real problem I got. I thought, you know, Utah is at a high altitude. It's here in the mountains. It's a high altitude. Scientific fact, people who live at a high altitude have thinner blood than people that live at low altitudes. Well, I've been living in Utah my whole life. I got to have thin blood. You got, and you party hard on thin blood, you have a problem. What I need to do is get to sea level. Thicken up my blood a little bit, and I'll be okay, you know? So I call a buddy who lives in Seattle, that sea level. Told him about these problems I'm having. He said, man, get away from there. Come up here, stay with us. So I said, I don't want to impose on you and Gail and your five kids. He says, no imposition, so I'll be there Tuesday, you know? So I moved to Seattle. Wasn't doing anything in Seattle, just doing a little drinking and working on thickening up my blood. And when you're in that kind of condition, the next logical thing you want to do, everybody knows this, the next logical thing you want to do, hell, you're going to want to gamble. Best time to gamble is when you're unemployed. So I started playing poker. It was legal up there, they had little poker houses. And when you're a hot shot and a high flyer like me, you want to be where the real action is, and that's down in Nevada. So I started running down to Nevada, playing the casinos, and I finally thought, who am I kidding? I'm just going to move to Nevada, fulfill my destiny. That's lower than sea level. You get thick blood down there in Nevada. So I moved down there to Nevada, bounced around Las Vegas, ended up in Reno, Tahoe area, and wasn't doing anything, just doing a little drinking, playing a little poker, working on thickening up my blood. And a buddy of mine called me from Salt Lake, invited me to come back over. Shouldn't have gone, doing real good in Reno. I come over to Salt Lake that weekend. We got to a place called One More Time Club. I don't know if you remember that place. And great club. I think it was on 39th South. And I met her. She's at the bar waiting. They're always at the bar waiting for me. I don't know how. I don't have a problem. I could leave tonight. She's at the bar waiting for me. I promise you that. And I fell in love. I wanted to take her out Saturday. She couldn't go out Saturday or Sunday. I had to stay till Monday. Supposed to go home Sunday. Should have gone home Sunday. Stayed till Monday. We got Monday on this date. It was a bad date. You know you got a bad date when you invite them to dinner and then they really want to eat? Because I never drank. I never eat when I drink. You know? And so she's eating and I'm drinking. Well, I'm a gentleman, so every time I order me a whiskey or her a glass of wine. Well, the woman ain't keeping up. Her wine's stacking up, you know. Now, to keep from being embarrassed with all these bottles, I got to drink my whiskey and drink her wine. It was just a bad deal. And finally, she said, take me home, and I want to take her home. She's no fun at all. Took her home, dropped her off, and it was 10:30. And went over to Price's house. I bought a gallon of wine because she said she liked wine, so I bought a gallon. And didn't drink hardly any of it, and so we drank that wine. I said, now tomorrow night, by the way, that Monday was October 6, 1981. So the next day was Tuesday, October 7, 1981. I said, we're going to hit this town one more time, then I got to get out of here. High altitude drinking will get me in trouble. So we go out Tuesday drinking. We started the Joker Club. Maybe some of you remember the Joker Club. It was not a private club down on 2nd South State Street. It was, okay, it was a topless joint. And what a very fancy topless joint. They had one dancer in the whole place, you know. And you had to be drunk to appreciate her. I mean, it was just a sad deal. It's no longer there. We started the Joker Club, and then we decided to go to the Hilton, see the fashion show. So we go to the fashion show at the Hilton. I remember the fashion show, and then I blacked out. I black out a lot. Black out a lot. People say, did you black out every time you drink? How do you know? I black out a lot. Some blackouts are a little scary. Some aren't too bad. Okay, there are two factors that determine how scary a blackout is. The first factor is how long are you blacked out. The longer you're blacked out, the more scary they are. Okay. Second factor is what are you doing when you come out of your blackout. That adds to the scary factor a lot. And so I wasn't blacked out that long. I came out of my blackout that night, but I came out of my blackout at the worst time. Without a doubt, the worst time to come out of a blackout. And those of you that blackout know that that's when you're talking to the cops. Because you don't have a clue where you are in the conversation, you know? And you can't ask, what are we talking about? You can't say that, you know? You can't say that. So you got to figure out, what have we talked about? What have I already admitted to? What have I given them? You know, you got to figure all that out without asking any questions. And it's a very difficult time coming out of a blackout. And I finally figured out they wanted my driver's license. Well, I didn't have it. They'd taken my driver's license 3 DWIs earlier, you know. So I'm telling the cop, listen, I'm glad you stopped. That's where I'm going. I'm going right over there. And I'll bet you that's where my driver's license is. I'll bring it to you in the morning. They would not let me go over there. And finally, they ran my license plate, arrested me, found out who I was, and I'm in jail. And this time, they're ticked, because I can't even bond out. Can't even bond out. See, I knew the system. I knew the system. Whenever you're arrested, you plead not guilty, right? Not guilty. And back then, it was a misdemeanor. So most of the time, you got out on your OR. And I think the biggest bond I ever posted was $50. $250 was the fine for the whole thing. And you get you an attorney, you get out of your OR, you get you an attorney, then you start that postponing process, right? You postpone, keep postponing, postpone. What you're doing is you're hoping the cop dies. That's what you want. Let's be honest about it. You just want the cop to die one time, okay? My cop never died. He always showed up in court. And so the day before court, when the attorney says, okay, no more postponing. We go to court tomorrow. Be there 10 o'clock. You want to be sure, on the day before court, move. That's what I never went to court, I just moved. So I had all these failure to appear notices. And so they said, no, we're letting you out. You don't come back. You're going to court. So I'm in lockup, can't get out. Hate lockup. Finally, a buddy of mine named Stan. Stan came down to see me. Stan wasn't an alcoholic, didn't know anything about AA or alcoholism. But Stan had a lot of money, a lot of influence, knew a few people. And he said, okay, I've talked to some people, I can get you out. But the only way they'll release you is if you're in my custody. And the only way I'll do that is if you promise me you go to treatment because you're sick. And I said, oh, Stan, bless you. You are so right. Man, I don't know what it is, Stan. I go down there, I get down in those bars, I get drinking, I get drunk, I get in all kinds of trouble. I guess I'm alcoholic and I need help. But I can't get any in here. He says, I'll get you out. So I got out of jail. Now, I had no intention of not drinking. I didn't want to quit. I'm not going to quit. I'm just getting out of jail. And I will do or say anything to get out of jail. But I stay with Stan. Stay with Stan that night. Next day, he throws me the Yellow Pages. Says, you're going to know where you want to go, but you got to go to treatment. So I'm looking in a book. A lot of treatment centers in 81. And I called this first place, and I said, I need to come in for a little treatment. And they said, do you have any insurance? I said, no, I don't have any insurance. I hadn't worked for 3.5 years. You know, I don't have any insurance. And they said, well, this is an 81. It was $12,000. 12,080. I said, I don't need that much treatment. Don't you have a little treatment? And they said, that was a little. It was 30 days, $12,000 for 30 days. I couldn't believe it. It was very fresh. I called this one place, they wanted $18,000. 1981, $18,000. I was so frustrated. I said, honey, listen, if I had $18,000, I wouldn't need your goddamn treatment. Would have solved any problem I have. Couldn't believe it. Finally, I called this one joint. I said, I need to come in for a little treatment. She said, okay. I said, well, you know, I don't have any insurance. She said, okay. And I said, well, how much is it? And she says, well, she told me the benefits first. So she says, you get room, board, and therapy. We have two kinds of therapy. We have individual therapy by one of our certified counselors. And we have group therapy conducted by one of our certified counselors. And it's $9 a day. And we check in and we apply for food stamps. We credit the food stamps to the bill. And if you're working here, we get some state aid. We'll pay you $1.50 a day. You can buy cigarettes for $1.25 a pack back then out of the vending machine. Are you going to apply the $3 to the bill and bring it down to being about $5 a day? I couldn't believe it. I said, how long is your waiting list? He says, those other places that want 12,000, 18,000, they had 30 to 60 day waiting list just to get in. I said, how long is your waiting list? He says, oh, we have a bed for you tonight. I don't need to come tonight, you know. She says, I think you ought to come tonight. And I got a problem with this place. Think about that. They got bargain rates, $9 a day, room, board, and therapy. They can't fill their beds. Now, they're high-pressuring me to get me to come in down there. Okay, I'm the consumer here. I got my rights. I said, honey, listen, you make my reservation for Saturday or just forget the whole damn deal. So she made it for Saturday. I didn't drink. I hung out with Stan. Saturday came. I drove down there, parked in the parking lot. I sat in that parking lot for hours, watch them go in and out of there, in and out. I want to see what kind of person, you know, goes to a $9 a day jitter joint. And the guy's going in there, you could tell looking at him, they're alcoholic. Look at that guy. No wonder he's going there. He looks like an alcoholic. He needs to go there. They didn't look like y'all look. Y'all do not look like alcoholics. Those guys going in there looked like they needed to go in there. And I wasn't an alcoholic, but it fit my budget, so I checked in. And nothing happened. Filled out a whole bunch of papers. Got my room. It's a nice place, clean place. Down in Provo, ARC down in Provo. And got my room. I was on Saturday. Sunday, I had my first exposure to AA. Two guys from outside came in. They chaired the meeting. There were 36 of us, all men, sat around these lunch tables. And these two guys talked for a long time. Didn't listen to a thing they said. Because I'm watching everybody else. Trying to figure out how you do AA. Because I'm a real chameleon. You know, I'm going to go someplace. I'm going to sit back. I'm going to watch whatever he does, how they act. And I'm going to blend. I'm going to fit whatever I needed to fit. So I'm watching them. And these two guys got through talking. They started down the row. First guy says, my name is Joe Blow. I'm an alcoholic. I'll pass. Second guy said, my name is Jim S. I'm an alcoholic. I'll pass. I caught on real quick. Okay. What they do in AA, they give their first name, last initial, admit they're alcoholic, and then pass. Okay. There's something magical about doing that. If you do that, it's just going to like, that must be the deal. They had it written on the wall, admit you're alcoholic. It'll just take that burden of alcoholism off your shoulder, sit over there, you know. So it got to me, I did it right. I said, my name is John A. I'm an alcoholic, and I'll pass. Nothing happened. Not a damn thing happened. I thought, well, I guess Alcoholics Anonymous is really for simple-minded people, if this is the program. And besides, I must not be an alcoholic. Nothing happens, you know. Now, as distorted perception that is of AA, that was my perception of Alcoholics Anonymous. It ain't for me, you know. It's just not for me. Monday, got me my counselor, Dale. Lovely lady. Had an hour consultation with Dale. She wanted me to stay there 2 months. Dale. I've been here all weekend. Okay? I've been talking to these guys. They've told me they're alcoholics. I believe they probably are alcoholics. Okay, they look like they are. Okay, they've told me how this program, the first month, you're going to break me down. You're going to get me to be open and honest. We can save a month right there. Because I've always been open and honest my whole life. And I got a great mind. It's like a steel trap. Remembers everything. Photographic memory, scary as hell. You know, I did real well in school. You can get my transcripts, say how well I did in school. And I'm too busy to stay. I can't stay. She said, you're busy? I said, yes. She looks through her papers and she said, now, where are you working? Well, I'm not working, but I'm busy. You know, isn't that true about alcoholics? Alcoholics are the most busy, unemployed people you ever want to meet in your life. Go to the meeting tomorrow, right? Tomorrow Tuesday? Yeah, Tuesday. It's a work day. The guy's not working. He's got nothing to do all day long but get to the meeting, and he's late. And you say, where have you been? Oh, hell, I've been busy. Yeah. I don't know what we do, but we're busy doing it. You know, we really are. So I said, I'll give you 2 weeks, Dale. So you give me whatever material you're going to study during that two-month period. I'll read ahead. You can give me some pop quizzes if you want, because 2 weeks I'm out of here. She says, all that BS. Fine. She says, well, we'd better hurry with you. I said, damn right, you better hurry with me. That was on Monday. Tuesday, I got to go to group therapy, love group. Wednesday's alcoholic education seminar. They're showing a movie. I don't like movies about drug addiction, alcoholism. They're boring. Even today, they're boring. I don't like them. They're boring to me. So I'm sitting there, and all my ego, all my pride, all my contempt, prepared not to like the movie. And the name of their movie they were showing was I'll Quit Tomorrow. So I'm watching that movie. Tore me apart. I related to everything in that movie. I mean, it's like they'd made a movie of my life and they were showing it to the group. You know? I did everything. I talked the way the guy talked. I dressed the way the guy dressed. I acted the way the guy acted. I drank. I drank the way the guy drank. I related to everything in that movie. And I knew the gig was up. That was my moment of clarity when I knew the gig was up. What happened to me that night is I quit looking for that definition. What's an alcoholic? How do you know you're an alcoholic? I later found out in AA, see, we don't have a definition of an alcoholic. I couldn't define an alcoholic for you tonight. I don't know how to define that. What we have in Alcoholics Anonymous is a description. So you can't argue with the description. You can argue with the definition, which is what I've been doing. That's why Webster's got 10 definitions for every word, right? But you can't argue with the description. The most powerful tool God has given Alcoholics Anonymous is our description of the alcoholic. Because it's that description, as the alcoholic relates to it, that seems to have the power to literally strip everything that separates the alcoholic from himself. And I could see me that night like my mother saw me, as I related to that. I could see me that night like my ex-wife saw me. Difference was I could see me. And I knew the gig was up. Most powerful tool we have is the description. Think how powerful that description is. Two-thirds of our book, two-thirds of this book is what? Descriptions of alcoholics in the stories. Why'd they put all those stories in there? Just to make a big book? No, it's that important. Because it's the description of the alcoholic, when the alcoholic relates to it, that seems to have the power to literally strip everything that separates the alcoholic from himself. And I could see me that night like I never... And I wasn't happy about it. Sometimes you'll hear people from the podium say how excited they were to know what their problem was and how at home they felt in AA. That was not my experience. I was scared to death and pissed. I cried all night. I mean, my whole life just changed. My God, I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. I got to go get like a job, you know? And how am I going to meet people and function in a world that scares me to death when I'm not drinking? How do I function in a world without drinking? I cried all night, you know? And I stayed there 6 weeks. Couldn't stay 2 months, too busy. But I stayed 6 weeks, and I got out of there. And when I left there, I said, now, big part of recovery is aftercare. You got to have aftercare. But you're living in Reno. We're in Salt Lake. That's 800 miles. You can't come back here 3 times a week for aftercare. So we're going to prescribe you go to AA for your aftercare. So then they gave me Intergroup's phone number, and they said, call them when you get back to Reno. So I got back to Reno, and I call AA the first day I'm back in town. Guy answered the phone, and I said, my name's John A., and I'm an alcoholic. And the guy said, well, I'm Bruce, I'm an alcoholic. What can I do for you? And I said, listen, I just got out of treatment in Salt Lake City. I'm living here in Reno, Nevada. And, you know, I wanted to call and check in. I thought they had me on computer, you know. And if you don't show up, they put out a failure to appear on you, and you're screwed on that thing. So he said, well, I'm glad you're here. He said, you want to go to a meeting tonight? It was Thursday night. You want to go to a meeting? I said, well, yeah, you'll probably want to meet me. He said, I'm not going to meet you. He said, I'm not going to go, but there's a meeting at a men's stag, Holt Riverside Casino, starts at 8:30. I said, I know where that is. I'll be there. I'll be there a little early so we can meet. He said, well, I'm not going to go. I said, well, at least call them and tell them that John A., you know, is coming to their meeting. He said, they'll be there. Don't worry about it. So I show up 7:45. First resentment, Alcoholics Anonymous. I called, made a reservation. The guy did not come. They didn't know I was coming. Nobody there said, oh, you must be John A.? No, there's some guys sitting around smoking cigarettes, drinking. So we could smoke in an AA meeting, believe that. And drinking coffee. I got my coffee, sat down. Pretty soon, a little guy named Red got up to a chair. Red looked like an alcoholic. He talked for a few minutes. I didn't listen to a thing Red said because I'm watching how they do AA in Reno. And I'm watching all these other guys, how they did AA. Red got through talking. It was a discussion meeting, so they started down in rows. These guys did not pass. They were talking. Now, I don't know what they were talking about. Don't have a clue what they were talking, because nothing we talked about in treatment. In fact, these guys could not even introduce themselves right. Some of them did not give their last initial. They said, my name's John, I'm an alcoholic. Supposed to give your last initial. Guy didn't give his last initial. You're supposed to do that here. You know. Some of them gave their last name. They said, my name's John Allred, I'm an alcoholic. But Jesus, what does he think anonymous means, man? Giving his first and last name. I know I could look him up in the phone book for Pete's sakes, you know. I thought, you know what? If this guy won't respect his anonymity, I won't look at that guy. I won't look at that guy. I don't know who you are. Don't know who you are. If I see you on the street, I'm not saying hi. I won't say hi. This is an anonymous meeting, you know. It became real clear to me. These guys were talking. I don't know what they were talking about. But it became real clear to me. These guys have not been to treatment. So it got to me, I thought, I can help them. So I did it right to you. I said, my name is John A., and I'm an alcoholic. And I qualified. I said, listen, guys, I just got out of treatment over in Salt Lake City. And I want you to know I have the latest, most up-to-date medical and psychological information. That's when Red cut me off and said, thank you, John. Went on to the next guy. I thought, son of a bitch is jealous. I know stuff he don't know, talking like that. After the meeting, some guys come up and shook my hand and said, hope you come back. I said, I'll be back. They need me. They need me down there. They don't know what they're doing. Amazing. Now, Chamberlain used to always say, every man's my teacher. Some people teach me what to do, some people teach me what not to do. Okay? Most of what I share is what not to do, okay? Because I've done AA all wrong. Okay? I don't know where I was when they said 90 meetings in 90 days. That's not the way I did it. Did one meeting a week. Every Thursday, I got on my men's stack. Now, they will not let me share. But I keep going back. I figured I'm a hell of a lot younger than Red. He's going to die, then I get to share. Yeah? Now, tell you what happens when you go to one meeting a week. If you haven't tried that program, those of you new may want to listen to that. Going to one meeting a week, they told me in treatment, this is one thing that's true, it really helped me. They said, John, don't drink. They told me this in treatment, don't drink. If you don't drink, you'll feel better. And that's true. If you don't drink, you will feel better. You're going to feel everything better. You're going to feel all the pain, all the anger, all the resentment. You're going to feel that shit a whole lot better. You know, so I'm walking around Reno feeling better, going nuts. It was like watching paint dry, you know, just boring. What do you do all day when you don't drink? Terrible, terrible, terrible time in my life. But I'm going to one meeting a week. So I'm down there at my men's stag meeting. It was Thursday night. It was Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve. It's my first Christmas sober. Christmas Eve, and they announced, they said, now, tomorrow you got nowhere to go for Christmas dinner. You can go to the Dryers Club, Skid Row Clubhouse on Wells. It's free. You can go over there and eat. Well, I had nowhere to go the next day on Christmas, so I went over to the Dryers Club and ate. It was good. It was free. I'm sitting there not bothering a soul, drinking a cup of coffee. And here, old-timer spotted me. You know when they spot you, their eyes kind of glaze over? And they start to salivate. Newcomer, you know? So I saw him. He got up and started. I thought, look at this guy. This is not... Fat guy. He's fat. Fat guy. Big nose, funny hair, nothing cool about him. I like cool guys. This guy is not cool. He comes over, introduces, his name's Don. And he tells me he's a coordinator of intergroup. I don't know what that is, but I thought, well, I'm glad they found something for you to do. You know? So he's talking, and I'm talking to Don, and it became clear after a few minutes, it became clear to me Don had not been to treatment. So I start to tell Don about this stuff, then I'll let me talk about my home group. He gets a funny look on his face, and he says, do you want to go to a meeting with me tonight? And I said, well, hell, Don, it's Friday. I go Thursdays over to men's stag group. And he says, we got a meeting every night in Reno. And in that short time I've been going to AA, I'd heard something about this, a spiritual program. So I thought, okay, it's a spiritual program. Okay, it's Christmas, right? I can go twice this week. Won't hurt. So Don comes, gets me. We go out to the state hospital. They got a meeting at the state hospital at 7 o'clock. We got the state hospital. This is what we were talking about, what you're talking about. I get out there, and they give me a raffle ticket. And at the end of the meeting, they raffle off a big book, or as Bill sees it. So I get my raffle ticket. Went in. There were women in that meeting. First meeting I've been to with women in the meeting. I didn't know they let them in. I'd been to Minister Adjoint, Men's Stag meeting. I got women in the meeting. Couldn't immediately adopt that as my home group. Why am I going to Men's Stag on Thursday when I can come here Friday? My new home group, baby. I'll be back next Friday. This is it. So they had a meeting. I don't know what they talked about because I'm busy praying. Because although I have a great mind, I read real fast. Okay, I had forgot to get a big book. This is it, man. I'm winning the big book. I'm the only guy here without a big book. I'm winning. God, this is Christmas. This is going to be God's gift to me on Christmas. I'm winning this book. God is going to let me win this book. I'm praying for my book. I want the book. The book is mine. Okay? I mean, nobody's been praying like I've been praying. I've been praying hard for that book. I want the book. This is going to be God's gift to me on Christmas. I want that damn book. So at the end of the meeting, they went to have the raffle off the big book. Second resentment in AA. Some little gray-haired lady, 25 years sober, wins my book. Now, what's she doing winning my book? You know, she got five in my home. Can't even see to read, so win my book. So I'm storming out of there. Before I can get out of there, that little lady comes up and gives me that book. That's where I got my big book. That literally was the only Christmas gift I got my first Christmas. Okay? And I took that book home, and I used to say that I took that book home and I read that book that night from cover to cover. So if you ever get hold of a really old tape, or CD where I said that a long time ago, please believe me that when I said that, hell, I believed it. Then I got involved in a big book. So you wouldn't read the chapters they got in that book. They got a chapter in the book, chapter to the wives, right? Well, I wasn't a wife, didn't have a wife, didn't want a wife. Didn't read that chapter. Okay? They got a chapter in the book, chapter to the employer. Hell, I'm not an employee. Didn't read that chapter. Got a chapter in the book, we agnostics. I'm not agnostic. I know God real well. Didn't read that chapter. Well, I want to tell you, if you just read chapter 3 and chapter 5, you can read that book tonight. It won't take long to do it, you know? It really won't. But the next day, Don calls me up, takes me to another meeting. Every day, this guy's calling me on the phone, taking me to a meeting. And I don't really want to go. But he doesn't ask. He just calls up and says, pick up in 20 minutes. Click. How does he know I'm not going to go to a meeting? I went last night. I'm not going tonight. I've been to 2 meetings this week. I'm not going to go. Wait a minute. He's the only guy talking to me in AA. If I don't go, he'll talk behind my back. I got to go defend myself, you know? So an interesting thing happened to me. Now, at that time, I had no sponsor, hadn't worked any steps, but a fascinating thing happened. The only change in my life is I'm going to a meeting every single day. And I not only feel better, but I feel good. And I hadn't felt those two things at the same time in years. And all of a sudden, sobriety started to put on flesh and bones. Because I started meeting other guys in AA. And I started to like these guys. And I started to get excited to go to meetings. And it was embarrassing. I mean, Don would come pick me up in his car. I'd get in the car, and I'm sitting there. I felt like a little kid. He's driving the car. I'd say, Don, do you think we can go get ice cream tonight? We'll see. But it was just like, I started hanging out in a group during the day, drinking coffee, going to Don meetings at night, and I'm feeling better and good, and I'm excited about it. It's a week later. It's New Year's Eve, Thursday night. I'm going to my men's stag meeting Thursday night, New Year's Eve. I'm down in a group during the day. The phone rings, in a group, New Year's Eve. I grab the phone. There's a young kid named Glenn. Glenn's 17 years old, wants to know how to stay sober New Year's Eve. I said, why? Goddamn, Glenn, you're 17. It's New Year's Eve. We're open tomorrow. You know, this will be here tomorrow, 8 o'clock in the morning. You can call then. Don grabs that phone away from me. You know, that's when he passed the rule of central office. You must have 6 months or more to answer the phone. Put a big sign up above the phone with an arrow pointing down. Must have 6 months to answer this phone with an arrow pointing down at the phone. My third resentment in AA. So Don talked to him for a while. I don't know what he said. I went to get coffee. He gave him his phone number, not giving my phone number. But the next day, Don calls me and says, hey, Glenn stayed sober last night, wants to go to a meeting today. So I get my first 12-step call. So Don comes, gets me. We get Glenn. We're going out to state hospital. My first 12-step call. I'm all, see how Don does this. Damn it, Don. He's just driving the car. He's not preparing Glenn for AA. I thought, hell, I just got to do it all. So I start telling Glenn, this is going to be great. You get women your first meeting. I said, they're women. I didn't know they were there for a couple months. You get women. And I've been to several groups here in Reno. This group we're going tonight has the best looking women out of all the groups. Next Friday night, without Don, me and you, we come back here. That's what we'll do. And when we get there, Don or Glenn, you're going to have it. They're going to give you a raffle ticket. Hang on to the raffle ticket, because at the end of the meeting, the raffle off of Big Booker's Bill sees it. And if God loves you, you win the book. Don just said, Don just drove to the meeting. We get to the meeting, we get a raffle ticket, we sit down. I'm praying for Glenn. I want Glenn to win that book. If Glenn can just win that book after I've prepared him like I have, he'll stay sober forever. It'll be proof of God working in his life. He'll stay sober forever. And not that it really matters, but you know, I would have 100% 12-step call success rate. I can write articles in the grapevine how to have 100% 12-step call success rate. It'd be wonderful. So I'm praying for Glenn to win that book. And then the meeting, they went to have the raffle off the big book. I won the big book. Don Turbini says, see how that works? I said, yeah, I signed it and gave it to Glenn. That's where Glenn got his big book. Okay? And Glenn's sober today because I gave him that book. Now, that little experience, early in my sobriety, this is where I'm going to have to close. I have to wrap it up. I'd like to tell you a lot more, but I've got to wrap it up. That little experience, early in my sobriety, taught me a lot. Because it taught me how God works. Because God works through people. Whenever God works, it's a win-win situation. There are always at least two winners when God works. It's a win-win deal with God. No losers. Win-win deal with God. God works through people. See, I could have won the big book the first night. There'd have been one winner, me. But that little lady won by being able to share with me, and I won by being able to receive from her. A week later, two winners. I won by sharing with Glenn, and Glenn won by being able to receive from me. God works through people. See, by working through people, he gets twice the result for the same effort. Very efficient God. Very efficient God. God works. It also taught me how Alcoholics Anonymous works. Alcoholics Anonymous is one drunk sharing with another. And see, when that happens, that's the magic to our deal. When one drunk shares with another. And there are two winners. The drunk doing the sharing and the drunk doing the receiving. See, I've told that story in the 28 plus years I've been sober. Maybe 1,000 times, maybe more than that. Whenever I tell that story, I remember that moment of clarity. When I'm sitting there in the treatment center watching that movie, and I know the gig is up. I remember like it happened yesterday. You know? That moment of clarity. And when I've shared that, see, I'm convinced that all of us here tonight have had that moment of clarity. I'm equally convinced that those that come to A for a while and leave and are out there drinking and dying tonight had that moment of clarity. What's the difference between those of us that are here sober and those that are out there drinking? We both had that moment of clarity. I think what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous is we keep that moment alive. We keep it alive. See, as I've shared my moment with you and I've remembered what it was like and what happened, what have you thought about? And when I'm on that side of the podium, one of y'all is up here, and you're sharing what it was like and what happened, and you're keeping your moment alive. By the way, isn't this the perfect program for people whose root problem is they're selfish, self-centered? Because when you're up here and you're remembering your moment, I'm so self-centered, what am I thinking about? My moment, screw your deal, you know? We keep it alive. And nowhere can you keep that moment alive but when one alcoholic shares with another. Sometimes it's a win-win deal. You can't keep your moment alive by sharing with your therapist. Your therapist doesn't need to hear it. My life depends on hearing about your moment so that my moment stays alive. You can't keep your moment alive by sharing with your doctor. Your doctor doesn't need to hear it. I got to hear it. Because if I don't hear about your moment, I'll lose my moment. Because what happens when you lose your moment? You take drunk. Because it's that moment of clarity that is God's gift to the alcoholic. That's God's gift. And it normally happens before you get to AA. When you get here, we assume you've had that moment. And the proof of that statement is your last drink. I'm willing to bet a whole lot of money. When you had your last drink and you sat it down, you had no idea that was your last drink. I didn't. Hell, if I did, I'd have done it different. You know? What happened? How come that was your last drink? What happened? That's God's gift. And all we do is we keep that moment alive. And it only happens when one alcoholic shares. That's why the fellowship becomes so important. It will not keep you sober. But it'll keep that moment alive, which will buy you enough time to work the steps. Because in working the steps, as a result of these steps, you'll find that power greater than yourself that will solve your problem. And that's what we do in here, is we find that power that's going to solve our problem. And I appreciate you letting me come up to share. Thank you very much.